Resonant Truth presents Natural Time, Mayan Astrology for a Modern Age. I'm Lisa Starr. I was raised in the faith of the Mayan sacred calendars. These ancient cycles have been resurrected for a modern audience and called Natural Time, in part because our year of uneven month lengths is, by comparison, really unnatural. I am not here to lead any kind of revolt against the Gregorian calendar, but I do want to bring the Mayan alternative to light, and I want you to know about Mayan astrology, where the passage of time and your birthday within it has deep mystical and magical significance according to indigenous spirituality. I am passionate, I am transparent, and I am emotionally available, if not volatile. And that's because I'm a blue overtone storm. You can find out what you are at Resonant Truth. Today on the Zolk'in count is called Red Solar Moon, and it is the ninth day of the Red Dragon Wave spell. And it is in the lunar moon, day 18. I think that's right. It could be the 17th of the moon. This is one of these places where having a wall calendar really helps. I don't have one. Perhaps you do. It is roughly mid-week, the third week in the West. Last podcast, I kind of drove home that I consider this the trial by fire of each of our moons. I do believe that these moons have a perfect circular vortex that allows us to explore the four major aspects of existence, which would be how our mind works like fire, how our spirit is as spacious as the air, the atmosphere, and then the West is this place of our emotional movement, volatility. And then the South is where our body is revisited and all of these other stages of life experience are brought home, condensed, consolidated into this packed physical, biological being that we are. And that we don't start any of these cycles with, I am human, hear me roar. This is my incarnation. My body is complete unto itself. It's the reversal. I'm not pretending that this is the only path that leads us to that exploration, but it is in keeping with most paths of circular spirituality where we are trying to look at the whole being. And we culminate by taking these other aspects into our physical body, and that is where the wholeness lives in the final stage of each section or exploration of growth. So right now we're in the West where there is emotional turgidity and feelings dominate, and in the feeling space there's a lot of ricocheting off each other in human form and other forms of life, but you know, humans interacting with each other and touching on our emotional vulnerability and our emotional volatility, I think, is one of the reasons that we churn through a lot in the West. I don't have like deep psychological training, but over the many years of the pop culture's evolution of bringing psychology from the deep background to the very foreground, talking about trauma really openly, I do believe that when we're in the West, it's the place where we examine where our feelings got lodged by traumatic situations. And of course, lots of us have pointed trauma. You know, before everything was traumatic, there were certain features in our upbringing that may have, registered as this was a trauma that I survived, that I went through. And then, you know, increasingly, there just seems to be a reverb, a slow constant of life being challenging and in a way that has neutralized a lot of the historic trauma to just be like, well, it's just really hard to manage the fever pitch of hardship in the Western world. And I think that that's a big philosophical excitement for me, is that when I was younger, I could sort of look around at the larger global situations and say, well, There is famine. There's war. There's severe injustice that happens at the hands of, political entities and the revolutions. You can think about severe genocidal violence that has existed on this planet in the last couple of decades and always. But when we don't approach that in Western civilizations, i.e. the First World, I've always felt like, well, okay, but we have this other way of growing, learning, and suffering in the First World, which is, emotional damage and violation, not just emotional. You can think about sexual and physical abuse and the routineness of that in a way in the Western world, but hurt at the hands of those closest to us and relationally rather than like a political force causing disruption in terms of economic injustice and poverty and, as I said, like famine, survival issues. Instead, our survivalism has been mostly like not thrust us into to daily survival issues. But it's starting to penetrate, and there is more sense of physical survivalism or this horizon line of how things could be really dire for us in terms of survival is starting to work its way into all corners of the world. And I think then, it does become legitimate for some people, some of us, to say, yeah, I'm feeling physically threatened by my environment, not just like a familial dysfunction. So I think that's what makes it true that the trauma punctures and points of suffering are more routine and disarming and alarming. And that's why the third week in the West is a place where we have to confront a lot of that. Just how safe do I feel? And how are my emotions like swarming, swirling, tidally, sort of lunging, these big swings of internal or external emotional combat. I think that all lives here in the West, and that it's one of the reasons that you're brave when you follow natural time, because I think there's just a decision point inevitably that you are willing to expose yourself to those feelings and not deny them. It's not like we're on some kind of pristine path of self-actualization here, but that's definitely my take on it, is that we ante in and say, okay, I'm willing to explore, the brightness of my mind and the vastness of my spirit, but I also am going to spend time checking in with my emotional self. And then by the time we get to our physical beings in the South, hopefully the bravery of focus in the West means that we can keep our bodies in balance, that we can, soothe some of the physical disruptions because they might have been emotionally laden, emotionally inspired, but we attend a bit to the emotions and our physical bodies aren't just like battered and beaten by unexpressed or undiscovered feeling responses to what is happening worldwide, collectively, increasingly, as we move into this like pointed, weird space of human history. So with that seems pretty lunar. I think I'm always kind of underscoring right now, like, yeah, it's hard. And a lot of you who listen or stop listening, I really believe people stop listening because I may be this harbinger always of, oh, life is hard. And then maybe I'm just a teacher for the moment in some people's lives where I, as a blue overtone storm, have a certain bent in issuing this edict that we would have to face how contaminated life experience has become by post-industrial, highly technological human advancement. It's just one of my themes. It's something I can't seem to get out from under in terms of examining it. So we do that here in the lunar moon. In the lunar moon, identifying challenge and I'm sort of embarrassed by my own exploration of challenge, meaning what I can't help but notice that is challenging for myself and my everyday life. And it's just becoming comical because there really was in the magnetic moon a little feature of emergence beyond it. And let me explain again how that works in terms of the 13 tones and moving through wave spells. In the magnetic tone of 13 days, 13 moons, or 13 years, we get everything. We get the whole gestalt. We get the work wrapped up tight into this like protein pellet of new information and new karma. And then it is unraveled over some of these stages. You know, as we move forward out of the magnetic tone, we come into the lunar tone and we see, okay, within that nugget of new personal destiny, this is the challenge. You know, it is identified for us. That is a beautiful feature of the lunar tone that we can't avoid the little awakenings like, oh, that's really hard. That's hard for me. Oh, that's hard for a lot of people. It'll start really being, an everyday lesson, a teaching of, yeah, that's hard for me. Oh, that's hard when I look out in the world and I see the headlines. This is the hardship. Identifying the challenge means something that needs to be resolved and something we will have the tools and support to resolve over time. And then in the electric and self-existing tones, it gets parsed even more. We add a dimension of our faith or our sense of support from a beyond God, something that's larger than our own life experience, whatever you want to call that, however it arises for you. And with that support, we can start to develop the tools, which will also arrive pretty organically in our lives, to face the challenges that we have been able to awaken to right now. Right now for the year, we're awakening to the challenges that are part of this year's productivity and, personal fate. And then we will have the kind of wherewithal over the moons to come to see how things can be integrated without as much pointed polarity. So we just got to get through this. And I don't want to be the beautiful dreamer. What do they call that? The fantasist. It's like, we just have to get through this moon and then everything's going to be all right. I think everything can be all right when you have a state of grace within you. But I think part of the lunar tone is showing us the shadows. And in the shadows, there's undiscovered information, things that have been sublimated. Again, whether it's personal or cultural. And, it wouldn't be realistic to go through this particular tone, the 28 days of the lunar moon, in a place of total equanimity and comfort. I mean, I don't know if people can do it, whether they follow the 13 moon calendar or not. But, if you think back to the end of last year when we were in the crystal and cosmic tones, you have evidence that everything that arises does come to resolution. And even if the same thing arises next year, next lunar tone, you're like, wait, I'm sure this challenge is something that I've already looked at. It's so familiar. Why is it challenging still and again? Because of the metaphor of the onion and the layers of life experience. We just go deeper into the same material sometimes, or the repetition is just part of how we also come into awareness and break the cycles. And when I hear myself talking, I'm like, yeah, well, that's pretty steep. That's a lot. Is it too much to just be so awake that you can spend days and days, for instance, in the lunar moon, or we had a whole 364-day year recently that was lunar? Like, that's a lot of time to be take the blinders off and look at what's problematic. It's exhausting. And I really support you if you feel exhausted or if anything I'm saying is just like, please stop. I don't want to hear more about it. That makes so much sense from what I have been saying the last couple of podcasts, that this particular moon is also a kind of recapitulation or like a resurrected trauma reminder of everything that we had to face in the last couple of years, because last year was the lunar year and it showed us the challenge, but the challenge existed really profoundly in the magnetic year before it. So truly for the last 2 years, white magnetic wizard and then blue lunar storm, we have not been able to dodge or re-suppress the awakenings that have been so obvious. You know, COVID absolutely couched in the first year of this 13-year wave spell. And then blue lunar storm showed us a certain kind of variation where we got out from under one of the big epic points of evil, which was the supremacy of Donald Trump's presidency and his movement, you know, coming to terms with the Joe Biden election. And obviously it wasn't a one and done for, you know, millions of people that disagree with the results and are articulating that all the time in a fever kind of rebellion, you know, wishful resistance, coup d'etat state of mind. But there was a polarity that was epic in the lunar year where we got a certain kind of victory over this turn towards pure egotism that the Trump movement seems to represent. And at the same time, we didn't just like put it to rest with an election. And that just makes so much sense in terms of the 13-year cycle that we're in. The white wizard wave spell of 13 long years has two incredibly pointed, easy to read qualities. The quality of enchantment is the surround. White wizard is the shamanic perspective that there is not just a physical rational reality, but that there is this under current and also overlay of magic, enchantment, an unseen world. And in that unseen world, there exists, of course, the angel factor of beautiful, helpful white magic, but just as strongly, I mean, I don't know if it's the same strength or a greater strength, there is the dark magic and the kind of negative voodoo spiral of things that happen in an unseen way that are hurtful and harmful to the spirit. So we are right in the nexus of those two dueling forces, and still finishing out this lunar tone or this lunar reminder of the last lunar year. It's all pretty much on high still and always, it feels like, but it should start to ebb as we get out of the lunar tone into the electric tone next moon, which is the epicenter of this electric year. And again, the electric tone, when we touch on it, is the ease, the easing off of pure lunar face-offs of polarization by adding a third element, the divine element, the grace that heals rifts and divides, fills in the space between self and other. And for instance, if you feel like you're in combat and conflict with other people, internal conflict with your own sort of demon mind, there will be some neutralization and peace and harmony introduced in a forceful way as we deepen our time in the electric tone. And so what about this red dragon wave spell? Two important themes that are conjoined. One is beginning a new Zolkin cycle, and that the red dragon wave spell shows us what we're birthing from 260 days or a cycle ago, so we can feel a certain identifiable accomplishment. This is what I created. Look, it's living and breathing. It's taking its own autonomous breath away from where I've held it close in my creative process. I can see it standing there, this thing that I worked on, you know, kind of in the dark recesses of self. It's out in the world. So if you have a creative project, that would be a really obvious example. If you were fighting hard for a kind of emotional or psychological growth, you want your potential to be stronger and you put work into it for the last 260 days, you should see evidence of it being more stable in your life. You know, we could take some kind of more collective theme and be like, okay, they found a vaccine in the last cycle to overcome the pandemic's sort of insurmountable aspects, or the novelty of it has worn off as we make adjustments, and that even if there are obvious setbacks to that in different pockets of the world, for a lot of people, if we're honest, we were introduced to the pandemic, again, this kind of like weird shamanic wizard curse, you know, a pox, and we're starting to learn how to live with it rather than just be reactively shocked by it. And those little nuances, even, again, if it's imperfect, you know, you could look after 260 days and see that there's been a sizable realization of hope or fortitude. And I could, you know, go through any number of our, like, political scenarios and kind of give the same diatribe. So that's one piece of Red Dragon that we're in as we kind of come to the height of the wave spell. It's maximum moment of realization and accomplishment. These days, these pair of days that we're in, red solar moon pulsing our intention, and then tomorrow, white planetary dog, the highest manifestation point of the Red Dragon wave spell. So the other facet of Red Dragon is just this quality of the divine feminine and how that lives in each of us. And I guess I'll do my storytelling here. When I came back from my vacation abroad, where I was a mom again, traveling with my adult daughter, and I wasn't like super having to mother her, but I was dropped back into a relationship that I haven't had in a daily way for 10 years. And I definitely started to expand and breathe again into being like mom, being a woman who had a relationship that was maternal. And I had way more feminine attributes than I've been carrying the last 260 days, almost literally working on a house and being in a super strong masculine aggro, you know, like I'm a workhorse, and I'm drawing on all my physical strength and my mental focus. And I think of those as more archetypally masculine motivations. But then, you know, to want to nurture and care for and be slow and close is more, again, we're not talking about male female bodies, we're talking about archetypes that were created by someone I consider perfectly brilliant, Carl Jung, and they really to me speak volumes about energies and not gender identification. So I came back from my trip and had feminine attributes that were pointless and useless when it came to facing that I still have plenty of work here to do, and that it's sort of hard labor work. And within this Red Dragon wave spell, then I unfortunately had to capitulate that in order to do the work, I can't be in my feminine. I mean, I can be creative and I can have artistic designs that are dreamlike and emotionally wrought and seem to kind of emulate that feminine archetypal impulse. You know, it's hearth and home and creating a place where I and my animals and the people I know might like to feel safe and warm is definitely the backdrop here. But I had to just jump back in, no matter, you know, what my mood or desire, into being really strong physically and focused, and whatever it would take, I had to capitulate and do it. And I think that that is a reflection of the shadow life of Red Dragon internalized for me, because I really saw in the first day of this new Zolk'in Red Magnetic Dragon, I just had this icky pair of experiences out in the world with misogyny. And so that was misogyny, you know, I experienced it man to woman, me being woman in body, spirit, etc. And it was painful and shocking and redundant, because it's not new information that sexism is a huge part of the culture. And yet now I am dealing with my own completely insulated sort of inner struggle with sexism or misogyny, which is just like, yeah, you know, it's great to be in the emotional place and wanting to be slow and careful and caring. And, you know, slow doesn't mean stupid, but just more peaceful with the day and not like aggro and driven. And that was, again, not sustainable for what I have in front of me. I had to make the choice basically to subvert my own feminine. So that was, like I said, a kind of example of an inner misogynistic turn, because really, I suppose, to balance maybe my upbringing and being a blue storm, which is a really strong energy and looks masculine in a lot of ways, you know, it's work for me to undo myself and say, you know, I wanted to be feminine, but I can't really enact that in a daily fashion right now. It's painful too. It's painful to just be like, nope, I'm subverting that. There's no place for that here. And I'm really honest with myself about how it is a denial of a lot of the archetypal truth in my body and being, and it's painful to see it. But again, the shift from outer misogyny to inner misogyny, and I think when one is aware and sort of owning it and accountable, it's a little purer and less dysfunctional and less of a heartache than when it's unconscious. So I guess conscious self-misogyny is a step past unconscious. And also, you know, to not just be pointing the finger at, oh, this misogynistic world, I'm always mistreated by men, blah, 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 to be like, oh, look at, here I am, just fully on my own, not giving room and space to be fully feminine. I've got this covered. I don't need like some kind of machismo from the outside diminishing me. I can do it all by myself. And it's finite, the red dragon dilemma of this kind of grand arc of feminine divinity that's been denied by the culture for millennia. It's like age old, and I don't know if the Maya even had it perfectly handled in their day and age. Maybe it was like a lofty ideal, but maybe women weren't equal or revered in that society as well. I don't know. But it is part of the conundrum of the red dragon motif. And, you know, after this way spell completes, we'll be in White Wizard, and I won't try to teleport forward to what that feels like. But every wave spell has themes that are kind of, I think, sacrosanct to the 13 days that we pass through, and then they give way to the next wave of learning. And of course, there's a relationship from wave spell to wave spell and a fluid evolution. That's part of the deal. It's the good news of the Mayan way, is that things become really fluid. But also, I think that we ante up here to say, I will examine the 20 archetypes that the Maya bequeathed us. I will sort of accept that if I fully experience each of these archetypes as their wave spell arises, then I will create some kind of inherent balance. And I will also be sure to include some ancient motifs for a life existence that may not be included in a modern age. So, just see what arises for you on your path each wave spell, and then delight in, you know, if you get tired of, like, for example, the misogyny question, if it's in your own life, or you have a variation on motherhood and birthing in your own red dragon time, you're brave to feel what's challenging about it. And then in White Wizard, there'll be a new theme and new challenges and new grace. And that's the deal. I've gotten back on schedule, so I think I just have another minute to tell you that we're going to get to White Planetary Dog tomorrow, and it's a manifestation of love, and a tender, deep, heartfelt love that is the highest point of the Red Dragon time. The mothering mode is at its greatest climax, or it touches the sky the closest when it comes to this mammalian form of love. And then the wave will break on Blue Spectral Monkey, which is Saturday. And I want to just point out that that's Jose Arguelles' Mayan birthday. And I always try to kind of hold space for those on this path to pay attention to that day, because we couldn't do any of this without Jose. You know, we can do a ton of it on our own, but he was the origination point for this bridge from ancient Maya to modern now. And you can learn a lot about what he stood for by being wide awake to his day when it arises. And it doesn't mean you have to give total fealty to this man. That was never his intent either, and he passed on, and so he's letting us all have this on our own. But you can give a little intuitive nod to him and also see if he sends you some gifts from the stars. I'm Lisa Starr. I am another yourself, and in Mayan we say, in Lakish.